Welcome to the July 1st, 2025 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. We are having this meeting in the town of Yucca Valley, and I want to thank the High Desert Water District for hosting us today. Thank you. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it's your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera if you have one. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You will remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then may choose to exit or continue. Board member music, would you lead us into the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, may we have roll call?
Chair Perez?
Here.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Here.
Board Member Beltran Serrano? Absent. Board Member Music?
Present.
Board Member Satin? Absent. Board Member Wright?
Here.
Chair Perez, we have a quorum.
Thank you. The purpose of this public meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River region regarding water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted speaker cards for the public forum. Do we have any?
No, we do not.
Thank you. Okay. Item three, approval of minutes for the June 3rd meetings.
Yes. I would like to add something to the minutes of last meeting. It was item number 3 on page 5, item number 11. The very last line, basically questions were asked by the comments from the public. I would also like to add, and the State Water Resource Control Board.
And this meeting was held on June 3rd at the regular board meeting in Palm Desert.
Yes.
Do we have an approval with the changes?
So moved.
I'll second.
Okay. Madam Clerk, may we have roll call?
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
I will abstain as I was absent.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
So if we have three.
I don't think our B has to abstain, correct?
Not have to abstain.
She doesn't have to be there to, she's just approving them.
Just have to read it.
Yes.
I think so.
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
I did read them, yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. For agenda item number 4, the board will now hear an update from Laurel Firestone, our liaison to the State Water Resources Control Board. All items appearing under the, I'm sorry, that's it. Is she on?
She's not on at the moment.
She's not on?
We'll come back to her.
Okay, we'll come back to her then. Thank you. Okay. Items, agendas 5 through 6, all items appearing under the uncontested items calendars are acted upon by the board in one motion without discussion. There are two items on the uncontested calendar, agendas items 5 and 6. Item 5 is a water discharge requirements order for Nyland County Sanitation District, Nyland Water Wastewater Treatment Plant located in Imperial County. And item 6 is a waste discharge requirements order for the Travertine Development Geotechnical Investigations by Travertine Land Company and the Huffman Land Development Company in Riverside County. Regarding the uncontested calendar, does any board member wish to remove either of these items from the uncontested calendar? If any member of the public wishes to remove an item from the uncontested calendar, you need to have a filled out speaker card. And we do not have any, correct, Madam Clerk?
No, Chairperson, we do not have any speaker cards, but we do have the dischargers available for questions.
Okay.
I move to approve the second. Two items on the uncontested calendar.
Second.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Can you take roll call, please?
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
What was this for?
For the
uncontested
items.
Oh, uncontested. Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Can we add that a board member just arrived on the minutes? Acknowledge she's arrived.
It will be added.
Thank you. Okay, proceeding now to the contested and discussion of calendar items for adoption. There's only one item on the contested calendar today, item 7. Waste discharge requirements, orders, and monitoring and reporting program for Imperial Community College District, Imperial Valley College Wastewater Treatment Plant, Imperial County. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 7, which is the waste discharge requirements order and the corresponding monitoring and reporting program of Imperial Valley College District, Imperial Valley College Wastewater Treatment Plant, located in Imperial County. Prior to this meeting, board staff submitted a revised tentative order and a response to comments documents addressing written comments from the discharger. Copies of these documents have been posted online and placed on the table in the back of the boardroom. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
Okay. I will not administer the oath to all. Well, there's nobody. Nobody wants to speak. Okay. Thank you. All righty. Okay, I still have to do that. Okay, I will now administer the oath to all persons intending to speak on this item. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear and affirm or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, say I do. Okay. The order of the speakers for this item are President Kevin Gonzalez, board staff, comments from discharger, comments from public, board member comments and discussions, and closed hearing.
Excuse me, Chair Perez, I'm sorry. Laurel Firestone is now on, if we would like to hear her report or after this item.
Let's do it after, since we're already almost.
Okay, I'll let her know. Thank you.
Okay. Where was I? May I have a motion on the agenda? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Back 7.
We're going to proceed with
okay,
the
we need to
hearing.
Proceed with 7, the presentation.
Hello? Okay. There. Good morning, Chair Perez and members of the board. My name is Kevin Gonzalez, and I am a water resource control engineer in the land disposal unit. I have taken the oath, and my presentation this morning is regarding a tentative order update of the existing waste discharge requirements for Imperial Community College District's Imperial Valley College Wastewater Treatment Plant located in Imperial County. Next slide, please. This presentation will start by showing the location of the Imperial Valley College Wastewater Treatment Plant facility and some satellite images while providing background information and the issues surrounding the existing discharge. I will then summarize the proposed updates, go over the public comments, and provide staff recommendations and offer to assist in answering any questions or comments from the board members. Next slide. Let's begin by getting a general idea of the facility's location. On screen is a satellite photo showing the location of the facility, which is located near Highway 111 in the city of Imperial. The facility, indicated by the red arrow, is on the south side of the Imperial Valley College campus. The discharge from the facility is routed to the northeast corner of the campus near the parking lots to three percolation pots, which are marked by the yellow star. Next slide. For some background, the Imperial Valley College Wastewater Treatment Plant, which is shown on the right side of the screen, is an extended aeration-activated sludge package plant that produces disinfected secondary treated effluent. The facility serves the college campus's population of about 6,000 students and faculty. The facility is regulated by Order R7-2013-0018, which permits the discharge of secondary disinfected effluent to the on-site percolation evaporation ponds. Water supply to the community does not come from the groundwater, but instead comes from the Colorado River through the All-American Canal, which is then delivered by the Imperial Irrigation District to the City of Imperial for treatment and distribution. The groundwater's beneficial uses are designated as Municipal and Domestic Supply, or MUN, and Industrial Service Supply, or IND, in the Regional Water Board's Basin Plan. Next slide, please. As stated previously, the discharge goes into the three percolation ponds, which are shown in this photo taken from Google Earth in March of 2025. The ponds have a discharge capacity of 50,000 gallons per day, and the current five-year discharge at the facility is approximately 5,000 gallons per day. The discharge is well below the disposal capacity of the ponds. Next slide. I will now briefly talk about the treatment process. There are two activated sludge package plants at the facility. One has a treatment capacity of 100,000 gallons per day, and there is a second identical package plant that can operate at a design treatment capacity of 50,000 gallons when the first plant is not in use. Wastewater comes from three main facilities at the college. They come from the main campus, the operations building, and the on-site museum. The effluent flows into a manual bar screen before entering secondary treatment. In the secondary treatment train, the wastewater undergoes aeration before passing into a clarifier to remove suspended solids. From the clarifier, the wastewater may enter a second aeration basin that allows the flow to either recirculate back into the first aeration basin or into the aerobic digester, where organic matter is further broken down. The clarifier also allows treated effluent to enter the UV disinfection system. Once treated, disinfected secondary effluent is then discharged into three percolation ponds on the north side of the campus. Next slide, please. I will now discuss some of the issues surrounding the current discharge. The state's anti-degradation policy requires a regional water board in regulating the discharge of waste that can affect water quality to maintain high-quality waters of the state. With respect to nitrate plus nitrite, the water quality objective for protection of municipal and domestic supply beneficial use is 10 milligrams per liter. The current order does not include total nitrogen monitoring, and there is limited groundwater data in the area. It is therefore not known whether the underlying groundwater is considered high quality with respect to nitrate or nitrite. Next slide. Now that we have some background and understand the issues at hand, I will go over the proposed updates in the tentative order. The updates include a new effluent limit for total nitrogen, introduction of new monitoring requirements, and a reduction in the reporting frequencies. Next slide, please. The first update is introduction of a 10 milligram per liter total nitrogen effluent limit. This limit is based on the State Board's 2014 order, General Waste Discharge Requirements for Small Domestic Wastewater Treatment Systems under 100,000 gallons per day. The nitrogen limit will only apply when the effluent flow to the percolation ponds exceeds a monthly average of 20,000 gallons per day. Imperial Valley College's five-year average flow is 5,000 gallons per day. Half of their student population is studying online, and this is not expected to change. The flow is currently relatively low in volume, and the discharge is not expected to degrade water quality, violate water quality objectives, or cause a minor impairment of designated beneficial uses. The groundwater's beneficial uses include municipal and domestic supply and industrial service supply. Placing a total nitrogen effluent limit for flows greater than 20,000 gallons per day protects beneficial uses. It is consistent with the state board order, the anti-degradation policy, and the water code. Next slide. The second and third updates go into the monitoring requirements. Three new requirements will be added, and they include monitoring for effluent flow, effluent total nitrogen, and effluent nitrate as nitrogen. The reporting frequency for effluent and effluent monitoring has also been changed from monthly to quarterly to reduce the cost associated with producing monitoring reports and regional water board staff review time. On screen is an example of how the monitoring requirements will appear in the tentative order. Next slide, please. The proposed order was noticed for public comments on May 2, 2025, with comments due by June 2, 2025. The discharger submitted several comments contesting the nitrogen limit, and I will summarize them in the following slides along with our responses. Next slide. The discharger's first comment states that the Imperial Valley College wastewater treatment plant is a packaged type activated sludge system not designed for nitrogen removal. The imposition of a 10 milligram per liter total nitrogen effluent limit would require substantial capital improvements. Our response is that the limit will not take effect when flows are below 20,000 gallons per day. The facility's five-year flow averages 5,000 gallons per day, which is well below the 20,000 gallon threshold. Even if flows begin to increase over 20,000, and data indicates that total nitrogen concentration exceeds the 10 milligram per liter effluent limit, the discharger has the option to request a time schedule order. The time schedule order would allow the discharger ample time to evaluate, propose, and implement treatment options that would allow them to comply with the new total nitrogen limit. Next slide. The second comment from the discharger states that while discharge volumes are not expected to change significantly in the immediate future, ongoing campus development focused on expanding educational services may over time result in increased student population and corresponding increases in wastewater flow. Our response is that since the flow is not expected to change in the immediate future and the five-year average flow is 5,000 gallons per day, the nitrogen limit will not take effect. It is our understanding that the reduced discharge volume is primarily due to a COVID-related shift from traditional classroom-based courses to online courses. When wastewater volumes begin to increase due to on-campus attendance or other factors, and the data collected indicates that total nitrogen concentrations exceed the 10 milligram per liter effluent limit, the discharger may request a time schedule order as stated in the previous slide. Next slide, please. I also did want to mention that there were no changes to the tentative order in response to the second comment. The third comment from the discharger states that the surrounding area is primarily agricultural and historical use of ammonia-based fertilizers has significantly degraded groundwater quality. Shallow groundwater studies conducted during our WDR application process indicated TDS concentrations exceeding 3,000 milligrams per liter at depths as shallow as 10 feet, which already renders this water unsuitable for mewn use under the State Water Board Resolution 8863 framework. Our response is that the agricultural use in the area may have resulted in degradation of groundwater quality, and we recognize that TDS concentrations appear to exceed the threshold for municipal and domestic water supply under Resolution 8863. However, the underlying groundwater is designated for municipal and domestic supply beneficial uses in the region's basin plan. There is no groundwater data available to characterize the groundwater with respect to nitrogen. Therefore, in order to be consistent with the basin plan and the state's anti-degradation policy, the mewn beneficial uses must be protected. This includes setting a 10 milligram per liter total nitrogen effluent limit for the groundwater basin. Next slide, please. The fourth comment from the discharger states that the Republic Services Imperial Landfill, located near the college, presents an ongoing and significant risk to the regional groundwater. Applying strict effluent limits to our relatively minor discharge creates an undue regulatory burden and misplaces accountability. Our response is that the Republic Services Landfill poses no immediate threat to groundwater quality. Groundwater flow in the vicinity moves to the southeast. The college's wastewater facility is located 2.2 miles upgrading of the landfill, so any contaminants from the landfill would also migrate away from the college. Furthermore, on-site groundwater monitoring wells at the landfill have tested below reporting limits for various constituents, such as nitrate as nitrogen. There have been no recent leaks, nor has there been any leachate present in the sumps since 2024. Next slide. The fifth comment from the discharger states that the imposition of an effluent nitrogen limit, given the current circumstances, would divert funds from educational programs. We respectfully request the board revise the tentative order to remove or defer the total nitrogen effluent limit and instead allow a data-driven assessment after one full year of effluent and groundwater monitoring. Our response is that the Regional Water Board staff fully understand and appreciate the district's concerns about the potential added cost of treatment. Staff do not want to create additional burdens to the district, nor do we wish to divert funding from education. Although the tentative order attempts to minimize the district's short-term expenses based on current wastewater flows, the tentative order does not include the requirement to install groundwater wells or to monitor and complete a study. Instead, the tentative order gives the district the opportunity and freedom to collect data and investigate potential for the facility to meet the effluent, including assessing the feasibility and cost of potential facility upgrades. As a reminder, the limit will only become effective when the monthly average flow exceeds 20,000 gallons per day. If it is evident that the limit will become effective and the discharge cannot comply with the limit, the district may request a time schedule order. The time schedule order will give the district time to secure funding and complete any necessary upgrades to comply with the limit. Staff, I want to also mention that staff met with the discharger on June 18, 2025, to discuss their comments and our proposed responses. As a result of the analysis of the comments and discussion with the discharger, no changes were made to the tentative order. This concludes my review of the comments and our responses. Next slide, please. Staff recommends adoption of the tentative order. Next slide. This concludes my presentation, and staff would be glad to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have comments from the discharger? Or
no, we do not.
How about comments from the public?
No, we do not.
Okay. How about members, do you have any comments, questions, discussions?
I have some questions. Do you know what the depth is to the groundwater under the college?
Yeah, so it's roughly about 7 to 10 feet approximately from the ponds. That's where
so
they
left. 10 feet down, there's...
Around there, there's groundwater, yes.
And is anyone currently producing any water from that area?
As far as I'm aware, I don't think so. Most of the water comes from the All-American Canal, and that's where they mainly get their water source from.
Where does the college get their water?
So they produce their own potable water from the canal water that they gather.
So
the main central canal.
The main central canal, yes.
Finding 15.
Yes.
So the college has their own production well?
Not a production well. They have their own production, the treatment system. So they gather water from the district. I think Jose might be able to help me out with this one.
Sure.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. So yes, the college does get water from Imperial Irrigation District. They have their own on-site water treatment, potable water treatment plant. Right. So that's how they produce their domestic water supply for the college.
Oh, okay. And do they have any quality data from the water they're getting from Imperial?
Yes, I'm sure they do.
Are the nitrates level high?
No, from what I recall, the water quality from that they receive from Imperial Irrigation District, it's not high in nitrates or nitrogen.
And do we have any idea what it would cost the college annually if they exceeded the 20,000 and had to perform these nitrate tests?
In terms of how much it would cost to install treatment units to be able to bring it down to below 10? Is that the question you're
asking?
Well,
I guess, first of all, the cost to if they had to monitor for nitrates. Because if it's below 20,000, they don't have to test for it, correct?
No, they are going to test for it.
Regardless?
It has become part of the monitoring reporting program in this.
Okay, so what's that additional annual cost? Do we know?
It's monthly monitoring, Kevin, right?
Yes, so the monitoring is monthly, but they're going to be reporting quarterly, so their costs are also going to be offset by that and reduced.
Right, and yeah. So to monitor for nitrogen and nitrate and possibly nitrite, I believe, is what we're asking for. The cost is not exorbitant. Costs have gone up. It used to be that monitoring for these species was maybe $15 per, right? Maybe $45 or $50. It used to be. I know that the costs have gone up.
So do we know the travel time from their discharge to the aquifer?
Travel time from the discharge to the aquifer? Oh, gosh. We don't, because we have not gotten, or we haven't had, I should say, an analysis done on the soil, right, which would determine. It's mostly clay from what we know about the soils down in Imperial and the Imperial County, but at 7 to 10 feet, I can't imagine that it's more than maybe a few days.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, discussions? Okay. Thank you. Okay, this hearing is agenda item 8 is now closed. May I have a motion on the agenda item 8? Which is a waste discharge requirement order and monitoring of reporting program for Imperial College District wastewater treatment plant.
Also move.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, may we have roll?
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, let's go back to item 4. Hear an update from
Chair Perez. Excuse me.
She's on.
Can you hear me, actually? I'm still on. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
thank
yes,
you.
We can.
Oh, good. I'm so sorry. I've had lots of technical difficulties this morning. So, I wanted to make sure I could connect with you all because I keep having to miss these because they conflict with our board meetings. Your board meetings often do. So I appreciate at least getting a chance to connect and watch and see you all. But I have a few updates. The first is on our funding programs. So we conducted a workshop in mid-June on the Clean Water SRF Intended Use Plan, which is basically wastewater, stormwater funding for both grants and loans. And we do this, the Intended Use Plan is the annual plan where we lay out what our funding priorities are going to be. We're soliciting public comments. We're soliciting public comments. Actually, I think that just the public comment period just ended. And we're hoping to adopt our final intended use plan for that on August 5th. We also noticed two funding plans on the drinking water side. The first is the drinking water state revolving fund intended use plan, and the second is the safe and affordable drinking water fund annual fund expenditure plan. Both of those are now public in terms of the draft. We have a board workshop coming up on July 15th to go over those. A lot of policy considerations around drinking water funding will be discussed and are included in both of those documents. And then we're hoping to adopt a final on August 19th, and comments are due in late July. We will also be, we're continuing to hold our Delta Conveyance Projects evidentiary hearings. We are continuing to hold workshops on the fees that we collect for drinking water, water quality that includes funding, you know, all of the regional water boards programs, water rights, and the environmental laboratory program. And we have our final stakeholder meetings to discuss the proposed fees on July 31st for water quality and water rights. We also adopted a amendment to the, or a revision to the draft cross-control or cross-connection control policy handbook and delayed some of the requirements to ensure people could access certified assistance, and we adopted that on June 17th. We did our, in the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, we for the first time approved a resolution to return a subbasin, it was Chowchilla Subbasin, to the Department of Water Resources, basically ending the prospect of our state intervention in the subbasin's groundwater management. They had previously been deemed that have their plan deemed inadequate and had made really excellent substantial changes to address all of the issues, and we adopted a resolution to return them to recognize that. We are moving forward on a lot of water rights reporting updates and changes to our systems. We have proposed regulation text amending our requirements online. And we are updating our water use reporting platform and all of our really finally modernizing our water rights electronic system and data system, which is exciting. And then lastly, we, for the first time, appointed an administrator for the East Rosie Community Services District for a sewer system that was failing and inadequate. And this is the first time anyone's done, or that we've done this in the state, under a new law that was signed last year. And we just entered a funding agreement with the county to provide that administrator services. And I think with that, those are the things I wanted to update on. I do, you know, I know you've got some good items around related to nutrients, which is something we've been doing a lot of work looking at, trying to understand what would be best to complement regional boards' efforts around nutrients to address both groundwater and surface water and ocean water impacts. And we, like I said, we've been doing a lot, and will by the end of the summer have adopted updates on our funding programs for this next year. And I know that that's an important piece of projects like the one that you're going to hear about, and the Yucca Valley project with septic to sewer. So look forward to continuing to connect and appreciate your flexibility with my technical difficulties this morning. and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. You have any questions?
Yeah, I do. Hi, Laurel. It's Nancy. Just had a question. We just passed the waste discharge requirement monitoring and reporting for Imperial Community College District in Imperial Valley. And that some of that money, that would probably, maybe some of that might be able to go to them, or if they apply for it, or low interest loans.
Yeah. I mean, so wastewater, that's what the Clean Water State Revolving Fund intended use plan is for this next year. We just updated the policy, and the way the process works for loans is that there's very low interest, below market loans, is that you have to complete an application and get on the funding list. We would really encourage folks to apply, and I'm happy to provide more, answer or connect the district to staff if they have questions about that.
Great. Thank you. Just was curious. I have all that money. I think these guys might need some. So thanks.
Yeah. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. Thank you, Laurel.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Okay, now we'll move to the information items on today's agenda. Next item is Town of Yucca Valley Septic System Prohibition Update. The board will now hear a two-part presentation background on status of the Town of Yucca Valley Septic System Prohibition and High Desert Water District Wastewater Treatment Plant and Collection of System Phased Construction. The first part will be given by Regional Board Staff Emma McCorkle, Chief of the... Did I say it right?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Chief of the Water Quality Standards and Basin Planning Unit. After we hear from Ms. McCorkle, the next part will be update will be provided by High Desert Water District Representative Jennifer Cusack. This is an informal item only. No actions will be taken. Ms. McCorkle, please proceed.
Okay, is it working? Okay. Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Emma McCorkle. I'm Senior Environmental Scientist at the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Board. This morning, I will be giving you an overview of the board's actions in developing the Yucca Valley Septic Tank Prohibition. High Desert Water District will follow me with a presentation on their work to comply with the prohibition. Next slide. This presentation will go over the basis of the prohibition, the First Amendment to the Basin Plan, and subsequent revisions, and finally, the status of the prohibition currently. Next slide. First, let's review why the Town of Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition was necessary. The nitrate concentrations were increasing in the Warren subbasin of the Morongo groundwater basin. The Warren subbasin is the Town of Yucca Valley's primary drinking water source. It is well known that the use of nitrate-contaminated drinking water to prepare infant formula can be harmful to infants, resulting in blue baby syndrome. Because of this potential, the nitrate in groundwater was a threat to public health. The increase in nitrate concentrations was due to the increase in wastewater loading to the groundwater from septic tanks. The illustration on this slide depicts a typical septic system and how it works. The wastewater leaves the building and enters the septic tank where solids settle out. The liquid waste leaves the septic tank and enters the lines in the drain field. The drain field is the area where the liquid is dispersed. The liquid waste then percolates through the soil to ultimately discharge to the groundwater. Next slide. In addition, in the early 2000s, Yucca Valley experienced a surge in population, shown here by the large increase in approved homes. As you can see in the graph, the number of new homes per year went from around 20 in the early 90s to over 350 in the early 2000s. All of these homes added more septic tanks to the area and increased the discharge of nitrates to groundwater. Next slide, please. In 2003, the U.S. Geological Survey completed a study that reported the primary cause of nitrate pollution in the Morongo groundwater basin was due to septic tank effluent from households, commercial, and industrial facilities within and surrounding the town of Yucca Valley. According to the study, from early 1995 through 2001, the nitrate concentrations in groundwater in the Warren subbasin increased four times the background concentration of 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate to more than the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency maximum contaminant level of 45 milligrams per liter of nitrate. In response to the increase, on May 19, 2011, the Regional Board adopted an amendment to the basin plan to prohibit the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems in the town of Yucca Valley. Later, on January 17, 2018, the High Desert Water District started the construction of a wastewater reclamation facility. The facility would provide a higher level of treatment to collected wastewater, thus controlling the nitrate concentration discharged to groundwater. Next slide. The Water Quality Control Plan for the Colorado River Basin Region, or the Basin Plan, is the guiding document for water quality in the region. It contains groundwater basin delineations, beneficial uses to protect those basins, and water quality objectives that support those beneficial uses. The basin plan is periodically updated using the amendment process. Staff create a technical report outlining the changes to be made and justifications for those changes. The report is reviewed by outside scientific peer review and approved by multiple agencies, including the regional and state water boards. In 2007, the Regional Board passed a resolution in support of High Desert Water District's funding need to design and construct a municipal sewage collection system and reclamation wastewater treatment facility. The resolution also directed the executive officer to develop a memorandum of agreement between the town of Yucca Valley and High Desert Water District to mitigate water quality impacts while the collection system was under construction. In 2011, the first basin plan amendment to address the septic tank discharges in Yucca Valley was completed. The amendment prohibited discharges from septic tanks to groundwater. The prohibition was to be enforced over three phases once the collection system was operational. The first phase was to be along the main corridor of Highway 62, where the densest population is located. Phases 2 and 3 widen out from Phase 1, as shown in the map on the slide. As the sewage collection system came online and lines were made available to residents, they would be required to hook up to the system by the date of whichever phase their residence or business was located. Next slide. Due to financial, legal, economic, and technical issues that caused significant delays, a revision of the due dates for the original prohibition was requested by High Desert Water District and completed in 2016. Financial and technical issues caused delays with construction of the water reclamation facility. These delays meant that the original deadlines outlined in the prohibition would not be met and the deadlines would need to be revised. The new Phase 1 deadline would shift to June 30, 2021, and Phases 2 and 3 would shift to December 31, 2025. This added about 5 years to both deadlines. In addition, some parcels were determined to be technically or economically problematic to connect. These parcels were deferred under the revised prohibition until such a time that they became viable for connection. In 2020, the Regional Board received another revision request from High Desert Water District. As the project progressed, additional issues became clear. Yucca Valley has a limited number of contractors able to do the work of sewer connection, and due to that, more time would be needed for Phase 1. There was also the possibility that the Western Joshua Tree would be listed on the endangered species list, which would add steps to any ground-disturbing construction. As a result, new deadlines were created to allow for a new endangered species listing. With further analysis, additional parcels were determined to be problematic for connection and reclassified to deferred parcels. The amendment also included definitions, a compliance period of 180 days from sewer availability, a requirement for advanced treatment units for new or replacement septic systems, and updated maps. Next slide. The second revision of the amendment is currently being implemented. The two deadlines for connecting are on the following schedule. For Phase 1, by December 31st, 2023. For phase two, there are two possible deadlines. A December 31st, 2028, if the Western Joshua Tree is not listed as threatened or endangered by the California Fish and Game Commission, or by December 31st, 2031, if the Western Joshua Tree is listed as threatened or endangered by the California Fish and Game Commission. The last deadline is if municipal sewage collection system becomes available, whichever comes first for your particular business or home. Phase one is currently 96% connected, with more connections still occurring. The Regional Water Board is utilizing progressive enforcement to encourage compliance for the remaining 4% of the parcel owners in phase one. Now, my colleague at High Desert Water District will explain more about their efforts on this project.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Cusack, and I'm speaking on behalf of High Desert Water District. The presentation. Good morning, distinguished board members, members of staff, and the public. At High Desert Water District, we have been working hard to comply with the state's prohibition of septic systems in Yucca Valley and have been quite successful in the completion of the Phase 1 project, which took into account a large majority of the downtown area of Yucca Valley, where all of our wells exist, or most of our wells exist, and where our groundwater basin lies. We are currently working on the Phase 2 sewer project, which encompasses the previous map, Phases 2 and 3. Next slide. We've received a $104 million grant from the State Revolving Fund, Clean Water Fund. We applied through the program that was spoke of earlier, and we've been awarded that grant. And we just received final budget approval to begin with construction. Sukit Construction will be the contractor again, as they were in phase one. They have partnered with West Coast Civil on a progressive design team. And we will begin in the Country Club area in August, in the first week of August. And we are working on a groundbreaking on August 4th. We are just picked that date today, and we'll be extending an invitation to you to be there. Then we'll move to Story Park, which is another area in the phase two area, hopefully later on this fall, and then into Sky Harbor later in the winter. All of this is contingent upon the extension of the deadline on the grant that we received. The grant we received, we have to have construction complete by December 31st, 2025. So we are waiting on the state to make some legislative amendments to that grant program so that we can get that extension through the State Revolving Fund. And so we do appreciate any support that your board can offer us. And we are very grateful to Laurel Firestone for her past support in us obtaining this grant and helping us, and advocating on behalf of our community. She did tour our community prior to us applying, and has been a great advocate for us. Once we are complete with the Country Club area construction, private property owners will receive a written notice, and then they'll be required to connect. Next slide. So this is a map of the sewer area, the whole area that's subject to the septic prohibition. All of the green area is on sewer. All those parcels are connected to the sewer. The orange parcels are not connected to the sewer. And the arrow is pointing to the Country Club neighborhood where we will begin construction in August. That area is in the Kickapoo sub-basin, indicated by a KA, and that's about 185 parcels. We'll be mailing letters to very shortly, and they'll be staking and they'll be mobilizing soon. And then we'll be moving from the left of that map in Country Club to the right. So there's a PK area shaded in blue, a PI, a PD, and an SB. We'll be moving into that area. And then, of course, the contingent area that's shaded that is contingent because of the cost of the Western Joshua Tree and some of the delays. We're not sure if we'll actually be able to get or have enough money to get to that area. And again, moving even to PK or PI area is contingent upon us getting an extension on this grant. So next slide is a more detailed, zoom in on the country club area. And then the next slide, I'll talk about the Western Joshua Tree. So the Western Joshua Tree is an iconic species in our desert. We have long protected it. It has been under local protections, both through our town and our county, for decades. We have transplanted them. There have been permits required to work around them, to move them, and take permits. But in 2022, there was a petition to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission to consider listing it as an endangered species. They did a study, and they haven't made a decision on whether it will be listed, but there was, in the meantime, a legislative budget trailer bill that has created the Western Joshua Tree Protection Act. So while they have not listed the species, there are now Western Joshua Tree protections. There are fees and there are additional requirements by the state for working around Joshua trees. So if you have any Joshua trees on your property, which is all through Yucca Valley, because we have a lot of them there, and they exist in high quantity, and they thrive and are very prolific in our built environment. As you can see just by the pictures up on the screen, those are some properties in our phase two area. That one where people have planted them, they've been part of our native landscape. So they're everywhere. So the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is working with us for our phase two project. They have said this will not hold up our construction. They are working on a delegation agreement with the town of Yucca Valley and the High Desert Water District. We have done the Western Joshua Tree Census as required by the Act and submitted that. And they'll work with us to include the census in our permit for all the private property connections. So this will help to minimize impacts to private property owners. We don't know the exact details of this. We're working through that. There will be an escrow account set up. There will be funds deposited and fees assessed according to that agreement that they come up with. And we will have to have, of course, native plant experts along the way verifying that we won't be impacting the plant. Our system was designed to avoid impact to the Western Joshua Tree. So most of the work that we're doing, of course, our contractors will be in the street. And then the private property connection, a lot of that is in the front yard, existing driveways and homes where there's already a lot of activity and, walls, driveways. So we have designed, our engineers have designed to avoid impacting the Joshua Tree. So the alignments from the septic systems. We learned a lot from phase one, so that our engineers actually walked the streets and got the location of every septic system and did the design accordingly. And then also they'll be flagging where the lateral locations are planned to go, and then have a verification process with the property owner that we'll be tracking internally as well. So we're working very hard to protect the tree while complying with the state Western Joshua Tree Protection Act and minimizing costs to our community. And we appreciate your understanding the difficulty of this, protecting this and having to, delay the implementation of the septic prohibition, to maybe 2031 as you have. Next slide. So we have been, outreaching to our community. It's a very targeted outreach right now to the country club area with about 185 parcels and, of course, the communities in and around it. We've had an open house. We're doing monthly updates. We have a monthly newsletter that we're emailing out, and then we have some project fact sheets. We have door hangers. We'll be doing letters to them. We've already done some letters as well. And then, of course, just through social media, and our website is kept up to date with all the current information. And we haven't had really any public pushback on it. I mean, the most concern is the cost of the Western Joshua Tree mitigation on the property owners, and we think we have that under control. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
First of all, congratulations on your grant funding award.
Thank you.
Very happy for you guys.
Yes, absolutely. How many connections are you anticipating
so
for this $110 million? How many are you going to connect?
So it's just under 2,000 if we can get to everything, between 2,000 and 2,500.
And how many then will be left to connect to the system?
I don't know that number. Yeah, I don't have that number.
And are these connections paying anything for the connection, or is it free?
It's not free. They'll have to pay for their own private property connection. And
no, I'm not talking about the private property, just the...
And they'll be charged. Our board will be considering a capacity buy-in fee that will likely be added to their monthly bill. So that would help, because there's a part of the treatment plant that wasn't assessed in the original assessment that will need to be assessed to the phase two property owners as an additional capacity fee that they'll be buying into. And it does help to equalize. We also, so I know there's a matter of fairness, because like phase one had to do the assessment. Phase two, they had a part of that assessment also that they are still paying for. And then there's Measure Z that's being collected as a sales tax to help reduce the cost of the phase one assessment. So that's paying almost half of the annual assessment fee. And then phase two, while they won't have an additional assessment district to pay for this because we have the grant funding, there is a capacity at the plant that they'll have to pay for, but only those in phase two connecting. But again, that hasn't been adopted, but it will be coming before our board.
Okay, but
relatively soon.
Forgetting about the additional capacity at the plant.
So no, there is no.
Forgetting about property connections, will this $110 million be given away to potentially 2,000 connections?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is to benefit and to be able to expand the system. And this area that we're going into is less dense than the main area, which
okay.
had most of our EDUs, because the downtown area that's already been sewered under phase one has a lot of commercial and industrial.
In phase one, I know we've had some issues with some property owners wouldn't connect. And so the state has had to spend a lot of time mm-hmm. enforcing that. Is there any mechanism the water district can do for this grant that someone signs up where they have to connect because they're getting basically a free connection to the system?
So if I understand your question, you're asking if in the next phase of building,
I'm talking about this grant of $110 million.
Yeah.
Like
you're saying force them to connect.
Can the district have me sign an agreement because I'm getting this free infrastructure that I will connect?
I'll have to take that back to our board and our staff because, yeah, we don't have anything like that. I mean, there's already a mechanism through the state revolving fund or through your state water board that you adopted the septic prohibition. And we'll send out a letter once the system is connected, and we'll tell them they have 6 months to connect. The majority of people are going to connect. Because they have to, because your septic prohibition has mechanisms to charge them up to $5,000 per day. And just like 96% of phase one is connected,
yeah,
and we
I'm
have very
about
few
the people who don't connect, Jennifer.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the ones that will.
Yeah, and I understand that they're, so we would have to take it back to our board, but currently there is no policy that we have that would require them to connect. And we're relying on your septic prohibition, just as we did in phase one, which has motivated, and I think folks understand the need for that. And your progressive enforcement on those ones that are there, I think, shows that your board and the state is willing to do so, as they did in Los Osos. I mean, that's why we're doing all of this. And we have a very heavy lift, you know, doing the building. And the enforcement, I think, in general, we have relied on the state for that.
Hi. I got a question, too. Also, I want to say congratulations on the 97.5 developed parcels that are in compliance.
Thank you.
That is a great groundwater protection effort that you guys are doing, and I think that's really helping the groundwater be protected. And also, I was just wondering if you ever thought about I know it's going to cost a lot of money, cease and desist orders for you guys, for us, for the state, but there is another option that could possibly work, and I think other districts have done it, is to put a lien on the property that when the property is sold or changes hands, that it has to connect to the sewer. So eventually it will be, and since you have so many already connected, you know, it's a small, very small portion of that. Or the city could do it, or you guys could do it. I'm not sure how, you know, but it is another way that would be a lot cheaper than having to go through cease and desist orders, and the properties eventually will be connected, and that's what you really want, to protect the groundwater. Just a thought, and also...
Hey, Nancy, yes. To answer that, though, and I think, Jennifer, if there's a property that's not compliant and is sold, wouldn't the new buyer... probably as a condition to getting water service, have to connect to the sewer system?
Not unless there's a lien.
No. Yeah, so I don't know what the, of those remaining parcels, I mean, we'd have to see if some of them are even active. I don't know. If they sold, yeah, we could. But again, that's something that would have to go to our board of directors.
Yes. Well, just
and I think it's a really good idea, and our board president is here. I think that has been brought up before. At a board meeting, what are our options? Certainly, it's a legal question and a capacity question for our own staff, because we understand it's a lot of work for the state. We're a very small water district, mm-hmm. and just the administration of a grant and this kind of money puts a heavy burden on our financial staff, and they would probably have to be the same ones that would have to follow up on these liens. So whether it be now or later, maybe after this project is over, to look at that, I don't know. You know, that's something we have to, the board and our leadership would have to look at.
I believe Mission Springs Water District does that, so...
That's fantastic.
I think it would work. Also, as the land use agency, as these vacant lots want to develop, do they make them hook to the sewer before while they're development? Do you have
yes.
an agreement with them? Okay.
Oh, yes.
They know all that. Okay. Okay, mm-hmm. great. Well, thank you. Good report.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your groundwater protection project.
Thank you. We're very happy.
Any additional questions or comments? Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's from
yeah,
the water district.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is our board president.
Oh, yes, please step up.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentations, everyone. Scott McCone. I might answer, I might not. Scott McCone, Hidessa Water District board member. One question was, you said that somebody is using liens as an enforcement mechanism. Who is that? Did you say Mission Springs?
Mission Springs down in Desert Hot Springs, Mission Springs Water District. That's where I learned it at, and it does work. And being that you have, you know, a vast majority already connecting, it'd be a lot cheaper for everybody if something like that could be put in place.
I attended a regional water board meeting back in November or December, and I think I asked a question maybe after the meeting about liens, perhaps, that there's something on title and that when it changes hands, and I was told that that is not something that we could do. So that's very interesting to hear the exact opposite.
Yes, you can. Anybody could put a lien on a property.
Okay.
When it goes through escrow, there it is.
And then can I call you Ed? I'll say Mr. Music. You also mentioned that when a property changes hands, that may be a condition of having your water turned on. I don't know if it's legal, but that you would have to connect prior to getting service.
You know, and I believe that policy is already in place at the water district.
Okay, so new service, okay, that may be something. And then also during this discussion, legal, David, I'm sorry, but I look like you were wanting to say something, and I really wanted to hear what you had to say.
Oh, I mean, this is all, like, we're talking about High Desert Water District, you know, powers and authorities here, and not necessarily what the Water Board can do. In this case, our ability is, you know, remains as it was in prior cases where, you know, once someone is required to hook up to the system, and once they're within that, subject to the prohibition, and they continue... they can no longer use that septic tank. And so in a hypothetical situation, the Water Board would continue to issue cease and desist orders, you know, where there is a threatened discharge from that septic system. And then when they do not comply, they would impose the consequence for that would be potential civil liability for violating that cease and desist order. I'm speaking generally and not any specific instance here.
Well, I do know Mission Springs is doing that, so, and we had a there's a prohibition there, so I don't know, talk to them and maybe they got a waiver. I don't know exactly how they did it, but it would be much cheaper for everybody if you could do it that way. And our main purpose is to protect the groundwater, you know? Yeah. So, and it's being very well protected with your projects already, you know, 135 or whatever it was, 158. Out of 4,400 or whatever, you know, come on. Anyway, look at it and see what you can do. I'll help you.
Okay. Anybody else?
Pardon?
Buddy, you look like you were going to.
Well, I think the, as Jennifer mentioned, 2,000 connections are getting a real benefit. And there isn't much of a detriment to having them sign some type of an agreement that they agree to connect. That's all.
Up here. Yeah, I have to go back to that lien, because when the community was first made aware that there was going to be a prohibition coming down, there was a gentleman by the name of Jose Angel that he said, I know I mentioned that name at the regional board after the meeting, and they said, nah, he was mistaken. But he did say that some kind of a lien restriction placed on the deed, that when you go to change property owners, that they could maybe enforce getting a connection that way. So, David, I don't know if you want to speak to that.
Well, there is no lien authority that we... I mean, a lien is essentially a document that you record against a property, so that way when the property is sold... There's a certain money, like it's a mechanism for collecting on a debt. And that's kind of what, you know, if we were to get a judgment against somebody for not complying with a cease and desist order, then we would record that the value of that judgment. Well, first of all, it would be an administrative civil liability order. I think we were talking about that before the meeting. That I go to Superior Court, get that order recorded as a judgment. And then we can potentially, as a means of collecting that debt, then we record a lien against the property. But it's a collections device, so we can't, you know, use a lien. To my knowledge, I don't purport to be an expert on this, and I have no experience with liens in the context that you guys are talking about.
Hey, David.
Yes.
Could we file a less pendens, though?
No.
No?
No.
Pending litigation?
No, because there's no litigation.
You're making a really good point, because a lien is generally to collect some sort of a judgment, a monetary mm-hmm. thing. So how would that work? Although you say Mission Springs has had success.
Talk to them. See what they did.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know how you lien.
So, thank you, everyone. And Jennifer, you can.
Thank you.
To the lien on the house, it has to be connected.
But when the property is sold or changed.
Yeah, but that.
Okay. So I just want to offer that we will take your comments and take it back to our team and our board for discussion. I believe it has come up, and we'll talk with our legal team and Mission Springs. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you need any of our assistance, feel free.
Thank you. And we really appreciate all you've done so far to support us and moving forward with this extension of this grant. That would be helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, for agenda item 9, the board will now hear a presentation from the board's management team. Introducing this item will be Michael Pacencio, the board's executive officer. This is informational item only. No actions will be taken.
Good morning. All right. Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. I am Michael Plasencia, Executive Officer. The Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board is the public agency with primary responsibility for the protection of ground and surface water quality for all beneficial uses covering a 20,000 square mile area, which includes all of Imperial County, as well as portions of Riverside, San Diego, and San Bernardino counties. This information item will provide a detailed summary of the performance achievements of program activities, tracking metrics, and noteworthy accomplishments for the fiscal year ending in June 2025. The picture shown on this slide is the current condition of the East Pond of the Species Conservation Habitat Project, also referred to as the SCH, an important project which you will hear more of today. Next slide. The Colorado River Basin Water Board completes its work of protecting regional water quality through five principal functions, each of which you will hear from today. First, you will hear from Logan Robb, the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System Program Unit Chief, followed by Emma McCorkle, the Nonpoint Source and Water Quality Standards Program Manager. Angela Garcia will provide a summary for her unit, the Site Cleanup and Underground Storage Tanks Unit. Next, we will hear from Jose Cortez on the Land Disposal Unit's achievements. And finally, Michael Perez, our Enforcement Coordinator, will provide an annual summary on our enforcement efforts. So first up, I'd like to welcome Logan Robb to get us going.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Logan Robb, and as Michael had mentioned, I'm a senior environmental scientist, and as Michael had mentioned, I supervise the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, unit for the Regional Water Board. Today, I will update you on my unit's performance achievements for the last fiscal year and our performance targets for the coming year. I will also update you on other projects the unit worked on last year to assist our regulated community to complete important water quality projects and conclude with an update on our public outreach efforts. Next slide. The NPDES unit handles the permitting and oversight of facilities and projects that discharge to surface waters. Our wastewater program permits discharges from wastewater treatment facilities. Our stormwater program permits discharges from industrial facilities, construction projects, and discharges from urban areas that operate municipal separate storm sewer systems, or MS4s. Our concentrated animal feeding operation, or CAFO program, permits discharges from dairies, feedlots, heifer ranches, and calf nurseries, and our 401 water quality certification program permits projects that discharge dredge or fill materials to waters of the U.S. and waters of the state. Next slide. For last year, our wastewater program staff performed 7 inspections of wastewater treatment facilities, meeting our inspection performance target with 1 additional minor wastewater treatment facility inspected. However, we were only able to renew 2 out of our 3 wastewater permit renewals performance target. Today's renewal of the Nyland Wastewater Treatment Facility permit would have been our 3rd, but is the day after fiscal year 24-25 ended, so we missed it by 1 day. Staff also renewed our general permit for low threat discharges last year. This year, our wastewater performance targets are to complete 7 wastewater treatment plant inspections and renew 3 permits. Last year, our stormwater program completed 43 construction site inspections, 20 industrial facility inspections, and audited 1 municipal stormwater program, meeting all of our stormwater performance targets for the year. A few of the inspections were completed in the last couple of weeks, so the numbers I am presenting here are different than those that are in the staff report. Stormwater performance targets for this year are to inspect 9 construction sites, or 39 construction sites, 20 industrial facilities, and audit 1 municipal stormwater program. Staff are also continuing to work on reissuance of the MS4 permit for the Whitewater River watershed, which was last updated in 2013. A recent Supreme Court ruling will require us to evaluate the permit's receiving water limitations. For our CAFO program, the target for last year was to perform 9 inspections. Staff completed 9 inspections. A few of these inspections were completed in the last couple of weeks, so the number I am presenting here is different than the one in the staff report. This year's performance target for the CAFO facility, or for CAFO program, is to conduct 9 inspections of CAFO facilities. No targets are set for our 401 program. However, last year we issued 14 water quality certifications and 12 dredged or fill waste discharge requirements, or WDRs. Dredge or fill permits, either 401 water quality certifications or WDRs, are issued as applications are submitted and processed. I will note that last year the unit was short-staffed with two vacancies. We recently hired a water resource control engineer, Thomas Brown, who previously worked in Angela's unit, so it was more of a lateral transfer. Tom's start date is today. We are also midway through our hiring process for another water resource control engineer. Next slide. I'm now going to highlight our permitting work for the New River Improvement Project, Salt and Sea Management Program projects, and our amendment to IID's time schedule order for their El Centro Generating Station. This work is helping our dischargers complete important water quality projects. I will end my updates with an update on my unit's community outreach activities. Next slide. The New River Improvement Project strategic plan, adopted in 2011, provided a series of recommendations to deal with New River water quality problems in different reaches. Next slide. In the Calexico Reach, the plan recommended a trash screen near the international boundary located in the yellow highlighted area on the map on the left. The picture on the right is of the trash screen. Next slide. The plan also recommended a diversion structure bypass conveyance system shown in the map on the left as the red line beginning at the bottom right corner of the map, which will divert New River water from near the international boundary to near the All-American Canal overcrossing in the upper left corner. The picture on the upper right corner shows where the New River water will be diverted from. The picture on the bottom right shows where the water will be diverted to. Next slide. And finally, the plan also recommended a pumpback system shown as the green line starting near the Calexico Water Pollution Control Plant, which will discharge treated disinfected effluent from the plant to the New River near the international boundary shown at the bottom right in the map. The picture in the upper right corner shows the pump house located near the Calexico Water Pollution Control Plant. The picture in the bottom right corner shows where the treated water will be discharged to, which is a new outfall location for the wastewater treatment plant. The City of Calexico was the lead agency for the construction of the Calexico Reach infrastructure components. Next slide. Since 2022, the Regional Water Board has supported the City of Calexico in constructing the infrastructure outlined in the strategic plan. The City obtained three permits from us, a 401 water quality certification for dredger field discharges, enrollment under the low threat general order for dewatering discharges, and enrollment under the statewide construction general stormwater permit for grading work. Construction ran from November 2023 to early 2025. On January 9th, 2025, the city requested to discharge secondary treated wastewater from its treatment plant to a new outfall to test the pumpback system. This discharge wasn't covered under the existing 2019 MPDS permit for the facility. The Regional Water Board's executive officer approved the request on January 17th, pending the permit's renewal. The new discharge point, Outfall 002, is just downstream of the New River Improvement Project's trash and diversion structure. The city's MPDS permit was renewed in April of this year, authorizing the discharge of treated effluent discharge from Outfall 002. Although this was a 24-25 performance target, it's notable as part of the New River Improvement Project and their plan to restore flow in the New River segment where the water was diverted. Next slide. On May 23rd, 2025, the city held a ribbon cutting ceremony to commemorate the completion of work in the Calexico Reach. Staff will continue to support the city and others who plan to complete projects in support of the strategic plan. Next slide. The Salt and Sea Management Program's 10-year plan aims to improve conditions at the sea by constructing 30,000 acres of habitat and dust suppression projects around the sea. Most projects proposed in the 10-year plan will involve dredge or fill discharges that require permits by the Regional Water Board. Water Board staff meet biweekly with Natural Resource Agency staff to discuss current and future projects and permitting needs. aquatic habitat restoration areas are proposed in areas near the New Alamo and Whitewater Rivers and are shown in the blue on the map figure. Dust suppression and restoration opportunity areas are proposed in areas around the sea and are shown in green, and the purple highlighted area on the southern edge of the Salton Sea is the location of the Species Conservation Habitat Project, or the SEH project. Next slide. The SEH project is the first of many large-scale projects in the Salton Sea Management Program's plan, with approximately 4,100 acres of ponds to be constructed to reduce exposed lake bed and to restore passerous bird habitat lost due to the sea's increasing salinity and reduced area. The Regional Water Board initially issued a 401 water quality certification for the project in December 2013. The certification has since been amended four times to provide for pond expansions, the expansion of a west interceptor drain, and a drain interceptor ditch on the south side of the project area. The most recent amendment to the 2013 certification was issued in March of this year and involved updates to the project design for the project's pupfish connectivity component in the area noted by the number 3 in the map figure on the left. The pupfish connectivity project was previously authorized by a 2023 amendment to the 2013 water quality certification, and permanent impacts associated with the original pupfish connectivity project were reduced, and additional wetted pond habitat restoration were added due to project design updates. The images on the right shows progress in the construction of East Pond 1, which was a pond expansion project previously permitted by a 2024 amendment to the 2013 certification. East Pond 1 is shown on the upper right as the dry area just north of the wetted East Pond. East Pond 1 construction is almost complete. Department of Water Resources and their contractors are working on removing sediment from the pond's pumps from the Salton Sea and establishing a new outfall to the sea. Next slide. Staff are currently processing an application for the planned expansion of the SEH's center and west ponds, shown as a red outlined area on this figure. These expansions will restore and enhance approximately 4,500 acres of shallow and open water habitat and improve ecosystem functions in and near the Salton Sea. Next slide. The Vegetation Enhancement Project aims to improve existing native plant growth and encourage new vegetation in areas open areas using native plants and seeds. Grass bales are placed on site to shield plants from the wind and dust. Once established, the vegetation reduces soil erosion and dust emissions. Project sites included Clubhouse, Thule Wash, and Bombay Beach West areas. The Regional Water Board issued dredge or fill waste discharge requirements for the project in December of 2021. The bottom left image, taken near the Salton City, shows plants growing among the grass bales. In February of this year, the Thule Wash Wetland Enhancement Project was enrolled under a General 401 water quality certification for removing non-native plants. The project involved mechanically removing 0.34 acres of salt cedar from a wetland within the Thule Wash site. The bottom right image shows work being completed in the project area. A 581-acre wetland project is planned east of Bombay Beach to stabilize and enhance emergent freshwater and saline wetland vegetation and support habitat development on nearby exposed lake bed. A pre-filing meeting for this project was held on June 12th. Staff are also reviewing an application for a 168-acre IID vegetation project east of Bombay Beach. Both projects will be enrolled under the Statewide Restoration General Order, or SRGO. Next slide. Another permitting project the MPDS staff worked on last year was the amendment to Imperial Irrigation District's time schedule order. As a result of the amendment, two milestones set by the original time schedule order, R7-2020-0019, were extended, and interim effluent limitations for metals set by the original time schedule order remained in effect. IID had already completed their CEQA analysis and obtained funding, two major hurdles for the compliance project. But the project was delayed due to CEQA lead agency issues, project revisions and delays with selecting a contractor. The extensions provided IID with additional time to select a contractor to complete their compliance project and bring the discharges from the El Centro Generating Station into compliance with Order R7-2020-0006 by December of 2027. The picture on the right shows the elements of IID's compliance project, which consist of evaporation ponds and the equipment to discharge their treated wastewater to the ponds. Next slide. And finally, I will conclude my update by highlighting our outreach activities for fiscal year 24-25. The MPDS unit continued our efforts to develop and send out the fact sheets for the year highlighting plan permitting activities. The updated fact sheet was posted on our webpage in the announcement section. Staff also sent copies in Spanish and English to tribal contacts and other organizations in the community. This year, our tribal outreach was a little more focused, sending the fact sheet out to tribal communities most affected by our permits for the Coachella Valley and Imperial Valley areas. And this was to reduce noticing fatigue. Unit staff also participated in a few outreach events with other water board staff. Emma McCorkle will discuss these outreach efforts in her unit updates. Staff plan to update our fact sheets and continue to participate in outreach events in the following year. This concludes my unit updates. Next up is Emma McCorkle, who will update you on the Basin Planning Unit's activities. Thank you.
Logan, I have a quick question. For wastewater permits, like down in the lower desert, say, for instance, Coachella Valley, there's four or five wastewater facilities. Are their discharge requirements very similar? And if they're not, what would be variables?
The difference between an MPDS and a WDR?
No. Just an MPDS permit, say, does Coachella's very similar to Mission Springs, which is very similar to Valley Sanitation? Or are there differences due to other variables?
Well, I think they're going to be different based on reasonable potential analysis of the facility's performance and whether they're able to meet water quality standards. If there is a reasonable potential for them to exceed, it would be assigned different effluent limits.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning again. As Logan mentioned, I'm Emma McCorkle, the unit chief of the Water Quality Standards and Nonpoint Source Unit. As a refresher, the Water Quality Standards and Nonpoint Source Unit is the planning group for the region. The unit houses the basin planning, total maximum daily load, or TMDL, integrated report, nonpoint source, and irrigated lands programs. These programs have large projects that take multiple years to complete due to the amount of research, external approvals, and public processes. The unit updates the basin plan and determines what water quality standards are best for the region. Using those standards, the integrated report assesses and evaluates collected data to determine impairments in the region's waters. Once the impairments have been identified, TMDLs can be developed to set limits on pollutant discharges and identify sources of those pollutants. One of the main ways that we implement TMDLs is through our four agricultural general orders and the coalitions authorized through them. These orders outline monitoring and best practices that should be followed to reduce pollutants entering surface waters. The Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program is the largest component of the Nonpoint Source Program. Next slide. In addition to the five programs mentioned previously, the unit also handles the environmental justice, tribal coordination, and leads outreach efforts for the region. We have increased our use of translation services at public meetings and are working to have more documents translated into Spanish to better reach community members. We are also strengthening relationships with community groups to better address community concerns. These interactions have been invaluable as they help us plan our outreach in a meaningful way. Our tribal coordinator, Samantha Shapiro, has been working hard to update our tribal contact information and establish relationships with area tribes. This is extremely beneficial as we start outreach for possibly designating tribal beneficial uses for some of our region's waters. And as Logan mentioned, the board does, you know, outreach efforts in the region. This year, with help from his staff from his unit and mine, We set up tables and engaged with the public about our work at the Riverside County Fair, the Wildflower Festival in Palm Desert, and the Salton Sea Workshop. These events were well attended, and staff talked to numerous members of the public. They answered questions and shared information with community members. Next slide, please. The unit is also working on a few Salton Sea projects. We have continued quarterly sampling of the open sea into this year as planned. We are partnered with our sister agencies, the Department of Water Resources and California Department of Fish and Wildlife. This partnership is enabling us to collect samples from the Salton Sea and filling a large data gap. This last November, we were able to sample one point at the north end of the sea on a second day of sampling. After launching from the SCH boat ramp, the crew drove the length of the sea to grab samples at the northern end. Regional Water Board staff met the sampling crew on shore to take the samples to the lab, while Fish and Wildlife staff continued on with additional work. For this to work, we had to extensively plan and coordinate staff of both agencies, making it very, very difficult to pull off. A second boat ramp is the best way for us to sample the northern end with our limited resources and time. The data from this endeavor is being shared internally with our sister agencies and will be available to the public via the California Environmental Data Exchange Network, or CEDIN. We have also started sampling at the species conservation habitats. We have been gathering samples at the sedimentation ponds, which Logan showed you pictures of, where the New River and Salton Sea water are mixed before flowing into habitats. The data will enable us to assess the water quality and designate beneficial uses. Staff sampled last October, this April, and May. Sampling moving forward is uncertain due to budgetary cutbacks, though, so stay tuned. Next slide. As for planning projects, we are developing a Salton Sea TMDL for dissolved oxygen and nutrients. Staff is researching appropriate targets and will be using the data we are collecting now to ensure we are addressing current conditions. Staff are also developing two basin plan amendments to address beneficial uses for the Salton Sea and the new constructed habitats at the southern end. We will be revising the Salton Sea's aquatic habitat beneficial use to reflect the actual conditions of an inland saline water body instead of the current warm freshwater designation. The other amendment will assign beneficial uses to the new constructed habitats so that we can protect those waters and the wildlife that are using them. And they're already using them. It's very nice down there. Next slide. Performance targets for the Water Quality Standards and Non-Point Source Unit are only for the Basin Planning and TMDL programs. No other programs in the unit are represented. The targets for fiscal year 24-25 have been rolled over into the current year as they were not completed. There were some unforeseen setbacks due to resource availability and outside agency issues that delayed completion. They are on track to be considered by the board by the end of this fiscal year. The completed TMDL that you'll see on the achieved column, it was the Imperial Valley Pyrethroid Pesticides TMDL with seven water body pollutant combinations and adopted by this board last July, putting it in this fiscal year's accounting. For fiscal year 25-26, we have a target of two adopted TMDLs that will address six water body pollutant combinations. One project with four water body pollutant combinations is the Alamo River Chloride Indicator Bacteria and Toxicity TMDL, which is out for public comment. The other project for this fiscal year is the New River Ammonia and Toxicity TMDL with two water body pollutant combinations. It is being prepared for scientific peer review. No basin planning projects will be ready for consideration this fiscal year. Next slide. We were able to mark a few accomplishments this year. One of our basin plan amendments was approved by the state board. The tribal beneficial uses, statewide mercury objectives, and administrative updates amendment was adopted in April 2025 at the state water board. The next step for this amendment is the Office of Administrative Law approval. The Imperial Valley Pyrethroid Pesticides, I mentioned earlier, was approved by this board in July of 2024. A comment was received during the state board comment period, which occurs prior to state board consideration. Staff are addressing the comments and working to schedule the state board hearing. Finally, a workshop was held for one of this year's TMDL targets. The Alamo River Chloride Indicator Bacteria and Toxicity TMDL was presented to the board and the public during the comment period. Staff are addressing comments and will hold the hearing later this year. This concludes our unit's work and status updates. Next is Angela Garcia to provide updates on the cleanup unit.
Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Angela Garcia, and I am the program manager for the site cleanup and salt and nutrient management planning efforts. In my unit, there are three engineering geologists, one water resource control engineer, and one environmental scientist. As of today, we have one vacancy for a water resources control engineer. The first program I oversee is an underground storage tank, or the UST program. With this program, we regulate and oversee cleanups of unauthorized releases of petroleum in the form of gas, diesel, mortar oil, and jet fuel from underground storage tank or the distribution piping associated with those USTs. The second program is the site cleanup program. Here our staff investigate and clean up non-federally owned sites with unauthorized releases of pollutants to the environment, including soil, groundwater, surface water, and sediments. The pollutants are diverse and include solvents, pesticides, heavy metals, volatile and semi-volatile organic compounds, and other contaminants used by manufacturing or industrial facilities. This program includes surface spills or leaks from above ground storage tanks. In my program, we also work on the Department of Defense projects that include unauthorized releases of pollutants at military sites. This program is implemented through a partnership between the state and federal government through a memorandum of agreement referred to as a Department of Defense and State Memorandum of Agreement Program, or DSMOA. Another unique program in my unit is the Salt and Nutrient Management Planning, also called SNPs. The SNPs are developed in accordance with the state recycled water policy. Next slide, please. This slide summarizes the cleanup unit performance report for the fiscal year 24-25 and the forecasted for the fiscal year 25-26. For the underground storage tank program, last fiscal year, one UST site was identified to move from environmental assessment to active remediation, and we were able to meet our goal. This year, we identified two projects that are targeted to move into remediation. Another metric that our unit tracks is the number of projects projected to meet closure requirements. Last fiscal year, three UST projects were identified to meet site closure. Our team met and exceeded the goal by closing four UST sites. This year, four sites have been targeted for site closure. Now I will talk about the performance for site cleanup program. So the last fiscal year, no sites were identified to move from environmental investigation to active remediation. One site has been targeted to move into remediation during the 25-26 fiscal year. No site cleanup projects were closed. Last year, one site cleanup project was projected to close. Our team met and exceeded its goal by closing out two projects. This year, no cleanup projects were identified to enter into remediation. We also work on projects with the Department of Defense. Last fiscal year, no sites were identified to move into remediation or obtain closure. This year, there are no sites scheduled to move from assessment, where we are evaluating how much contamination is present, into remediation, cleanup, or closure. Next slide, please. This fiscal year, we have been striving to ensure that projects obtain the necessary data to achieve eligibility for closure. As I mentioned in my previous slide, we had forecasted a total of four projects for closure and exceeded our goal by closing an additional two sites. The following two sites are site cleanup projects: PASA Shop Number 1, located in Thermal. A former buried diesel product line leaked petroleum carbons from a 7,000-gallon above storage tank. 3,500 tons of petroleum-impacted soil was removed to a depth of 10 feet below ground surface. Confirmation soil sampling supported site closure. Coca-Cola Bottling Company is located in El Centro. Historically, two underground storage tanks were present at the site. When removing the leaking underground tanks, impacted soil was observed and removed. Regional Water Board staff conducted an environment investigation, and sampling results supported site closure. The next four sites listed are part of the leaking underground storage tank program. Blocker Transportation is located in Blythe. The site was a former repair shop truck transfer facility. During removal of the 10,000-gallon diesel UST, contaminated soil was encountered. 66 tons of impacted soil was removed from the property. Confirmation soil sampling result supported site closure. 10-4 Corporation is located in Needles. The former gas station contained three underground storage tanks that were removed in 2001. Investigation results met eligibility for closure without remediation activities. USA Self-Serve Douglas, located in Blythe. This former gasoline service station contained three 6,000-gallon underground storage tanks. Remediation activities included vapor extraction with the removal of approximately 36,000 pounds of vapor phase petroleum hydrocarbons. Confirmation results met eligibility for closure. Lastly, we have former Waste Crest, located in Mecca. This former gas station included two 10,000-gallon USTs and one 5,000-gallon USTs. Investigation results met eligibility for closure without any remediation activities. Next slide, please. The site cleanup program continues to conduct community outreach for all projects where fieldwork activities are planned. The outreach efforts for these sites has focused on disadvantaged and underrepresented communities. Fieldwork notices and fact sheets are developed in both English and Spanish and are circulated prior to start of any fieldwork activities. Transparency has increased with accessibility to project information, key contacts, and access to site documents. Next slide, please. As I mentioned earlier in my presentation, salt and nutrient management plans are developed in accordance with the recycled water policy. Three groundwater basins have been targeted for SNPs in the Colorado River region. The first is the Mojave area salt. Salt and nutrient management planning efforts is administered through the oversight provided by the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the Haunton region. The second basin is the Coachella Valley. Groundwater and salt nutrient management plan. The Coachella Valley has submitted updates to the work plan and has developed a technical advisory committee to guide the decisions associated with the development of the SNP. The work plan includes public outreach and stakeholder engagement throughout the SNP process. During the February 2025 board meeting, a verbal update was presented to the Regional Water Board. During the fiscal year, Regional Water Board staff have provided reviews of technical memorandums developed by the Coachella Valley SNP stakeholders and reviewed by the Technical Advisory Committee and the public. The third groundwater basin is the 29 Palms groundwater basin. Efforts on the salt and nutrient management plan consist of an approved groundwater monitoring implementation plan. The groundwater monitoring implementation plan is broken into three phases. The first phase is to increase sampling frequency of the district's existing production wells and have been implemented and sampling and has been ongoing for 10 years. We are now evaluating and discussing the implementation of the following two tasks. The first is to establish a water quality well network using existing wells to establish shallow groundwater data quality. And the last phase is being discussed for implementation, which is the installation of new monitoring wells, which is still in the preliminary phase. So this concludes my overview of the program that are ongoing for the site cleanup unit. Thank you for the opportunity to present my program's accomplishments for this fiscal year 24-25 and this fiscal year. Now, let me present to you Jose Cortez, Supervisor to the Land Disposal Program.
Thank you, Angela. Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, and all in attendance. My name is Jose Cortez. I'm a Senior Water Resource Control Engineer and Program Manager for the Land Disposal Unit. In this portion of the program updates presentation, I'll provide a summary of the unit's accomplishments for fiscal year 24-25 and the target goal and activities for fiscal year 25-26. The items I'll be discussing are the discharge to land program, the land disposal program, and the California-Mexico border program. Listed on the slide are some of the types of projects that are managed within these programs, and I'll go into more detail on some of them throughout this presentation. If you have questions as we go through this presentation, please feel free to stop me and ask. I'd be happy to try and answer your questions. And with that, next slide, Dan. Okay, so the table on this slide shows the target goals for the discharge to land program for fiscal year 24-25. And the projected goals for fiscal year 25-26. In 24-25, most of the target goals were met with the exception of waste discharge requirement updates and notices of applicability. And I have a question mark on that one. 43 facility inspections were planned and 47 were accomplished. The unit had the goal of updating 5 waste discharge requirement orders and 3 were adopted. Incidentally, the numbers on this table are going to be different than the numbers that I'm reporting because things changed from the time that this was drafted and yesterday, which was the last day of the fiscal year. So some of the numbers will be a little bit off. In addition, I'd like to say that as far as the unit's performance goes in the over the past fiscal year, the target goals were established for 7 staff, and so there were 4 people working in the unit throughout most of the fiscal year, and for they did an outstanding job with what they had to work with. If anything, for their lack of meeting the target goals, the responsibility would fall on their supervisor for failing to keep up with an ever-changing landscape. So we had 3 vacancies. One of them disappeared as a result of budget cuts, and the 2 were finally filled in May of this year. So we do have a full staff now, and it is looking very good, actually. So in addition to these items that I've listed, so 6 notices of applicability were targeted to be updated. And at last count, I had 5. I am not sure what happened with the 6th one because I was out yesterday. That's the latest information that I had. 2 local agency management programs were scheduled to be updated last year, and 2 were completed. For fiscal year 25-26 in this program, the staff in the unit are anticipating doing 55 facility inspections, updating 3 waste discharge requirement orders, and issuing 10 notices of applicability. So we have many small domestic facilities that currently are enrolled in individual orders that qualify for enrollment in the State Water Board's Small Domestic General Order. And in an effort to save staff time in writing and updating individual orders, we'll be enrolling some of these facilities in the general order by issuing notices of applicability. And in the following fiscal year, or this one actually, because we've just started it, there are no local agency management programs renewals that are scheduled for update this year. Okay, next slide. All right, this slide shows an example of a facility regulated under the discharge to land program. Facilities in this program are allowed to discharge to groundwater. The images on this slide show part of the wastewater treatment facility and disposal area at Ironwood State Prison, taken during an inspection performed in February 2025. The facility's waste discharge requirements were updated in fiscal year 24-25 to reflect changes at the facility. The item was uncontested, so you did not see a presentation on this. The facility was previously named Chuckawalla Valley State Prison Wastewater Treatment Plant, and it treated wastewater from two adjacent facilities. It was Chuckawalla Valley and Ironwood State Prisons. In October 2024, Chuckawalla Valley State Prison was closed, and the WDR's waste discharge requirements were updated to reflect these changes in operations and to change the name of the wastewater treatment plant. On the image on the upper right, it shows the one of two activated sludge oxidation ditches that provide primary and secondary treatment to domestic wastewater generated at the prison. Secondary treated wastewater is disinfected and used to irrigate 217 acres of grass fields, as seen in the image in the lower right. The facility was found to be in compliance with the waste discharge requirements at the time of this facility inspection. Next slide. Okay, the table on this slide shows the target goals for the land disposal program for fiscal year 24-25 and the projected goals for fiscal year 25-26. In this program for fiscal year 24-25, the unit's target was to perform 23 landfill inspections and 23 were completed. 19 other land disposal facility inspections and 19 were completed. And again, same as before, the numbers have changed since this was written. No landfill waste discharge requirements were scheduled for update. And for the land disposal, WDR's other facility types, two were scheduled for update and one was adopted. Other land disposal facility types include Class II surface impoundments, mines, and geothermal power plants. Four notices of applicability were scheduled in the 24-25 work plan, and four were issued. Target goals for fiscal year 25-26 are to perform 19 landfill inspections, 16 other land disposal facility inspections, update three landfill waste discharge requirement orders, and one other land disposal type waste discharge requirement. Two notices of applicability are scheduled to be issued. Next slide. This slide shows an example of a facility type regulated under the land disposal program. The images show some of the waste management units at Cal Energy Region 1 Geothermal Power Plant near Calipatria. Land disposal facilities are regulated under Title 27, and the facility types are typically lined waste management units that contain designated waste. These facility types are designed to contain wastewater and keep it from reaching groundwater. These photos were taken during a facility inspection that took place in March of 2025. The photo in the upper left is a lined brine pond where geothermal brines are stored and to settle out solids prior to reinjection. The photo on the bottom right shows some of the leachate detection system components. The brine pond and the monitoring systems were found to be operating in compliance with the facility's waste discharge requirements at the time of inspection. Next slide. Okay, so the land disposal unit also manages the California-Mexico border program. Listed on the slide are the major components of the program. Regional Water Board staff attend various meetings throughout the year related to border issues. Regional Water Board is a member of the International Boundary and Water Commission's Binational Technical Committee. The meetings are held every 2 months. And Regional Water Board staff Julia Macis, program manager, and alternating staff in the unit have been attending the meetings in person in the city of Mexicali. Members of the Binational Technical Committee provide updates on programs and projects on both sides of the border that address water quality issues in the New River. California-Mexico Border Relations Council convenes annually. Regional Water Board staff attended the annual meeting for year 2024 on November 7th, and a meeting of the council for 2025 has not yet been scheduled. When it is, Regional Water Board staff do plan to attend. New River monitoring at the international boundaries is performed monthly by the Regional Water Board staff. The unit is responsible for coordinating the sampling events and managing the monitoring program. However, the sampling duties are rotated and shared by all technical staff of the Regional Water Board office. The last monitoring event occurred early in June of this year, right, 2025. And so at this point, we're not really sure what this is going to look like going into the following year because of budget changes and funding. There is an event scheduled for July, but as I said, we're standing by and waiting to find out what's going to happen with financing funding. Next slide. And finally, more recently, the unit has started taking up the larger scope of the strategic plan, New River Improvement Project. The plan was prepared for the California-Mexico Border Relations Council by the New River Improvement Project Technical Advisory Committee in 2011. The Technical Advisory Committee was made up of numerous federal, state, and local entities and two non-governmental organizations, NGOs. The strategic plan was managed by a steering committee and consulting and strategic planning subgroup. The images on the slide show the northern portion of the river in the upper left and the southern portion of the river on the lower right. The plan addresses the entire length of the New River beginning in the Mexicali Valley and four reaches of the New River in the United States, with the five reaches of the New River that are identified. I'm sorry, the figure shows the five reaches of the New River that are identified with different types of projects associated within each reach. Next slide. This is a closer look of the northern portion of the river. There's a legend in the image that shows and lists the types of projects that are proposed, or that were proposed. The strategic plan identifies several proposed projects along the course of the river that are intended to improve water quality of the river as it flows through the Imperial Valley and into the Salton Sea. Some of the projects identified in the strategic plan include installing aeration structures, wetland projects, habitat restoration, continued Imperial Irrigation District, drainage improvement program, and continued total maximum daily load programs. Next slide. And this image shows the southern section of the New River. That includes the New River Improvement Project at the international boundary in the city of Calexico, which I believe some of you visited after the board meeting in Imperial. It is one of the projects identified in the strategic plan. It's shown on the image on the right near the bottom center. I'm sorry, on the right is incorrect. That's a carryover from the previous slide. Anyways, it is that area that you see where the green patch is. That's supposed to be a parkway. So you may have been informed while you were on the tour that one of the biggest obstacles in managing this project is the large volume of trash that accumulates at the bar screens and the cost associated with removing the trash to a landfill. Something to note is that the strategic plan is out of date, very out of date, and in need of revision. The projects initially proposed may no longer be under consideration. For instance, disinfection was at one time proposed at the project near the international boundary, And that's the area shown in the yellow with the big yellow dot and the arrows, and the arrows that point to the different sections. But that project has since been abandoned. That concludes my portion of the program update. And if you don't have any questions, with that, I will turn it over to Michael Perez to provide an update on enforcement items. Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, members of the public. I'm Michael Perez. I'm the enforcement coordinator for this regional board. I'm also the last person presenting, so we're almost at the end of this item. Okay. Enforcement impacts all of the programs that you have just heard about previously. Therefore, I work with all of them in one sense or another. I work with them to help identify and develop enforcement actions. The enforcement program that of the Office of Enforcement is to help ensure that water quality laws, regulations, policies, and plans to protect the groundwater and surface waters of the state are complied with, and that enforcement provides a timely and consistent application. Shown on this slide are the major enforcement priorities, which are mandatory minimum penalties, sanitary sewer overflows, and facilities with persistent violations. I will discuss each of these in more detail in the next slides. The first enforcement priority listed was mandatory minimum penalties. Mandatory minimum penalties are associated with the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System program. A mandatory minimum penalty sets a minimum penalty of $3,000 that is assessed for each serious violation as defined in the regulations, and each chronic violation, not counting the first three violations. These minimum penalties apply to permit effluent limits and reporting requirements. This slide lists the mandatory minimum penalties we have assessed during the 2024-2025 fiscal year, where the cases have been settled, our executive officer has executed the acceptance and waiver, and where the permittee has paid a penalty. The permittees and amounts settled are for Imperial Irrigation District, El Central Generating Station, for a penalty of $21,000, and Kent SeaTech Corporation Fish Farm for a penalty of $30,000. Next slide, please. This slide lists three additional mandatory minimum penalties we have assessed during the 2024-2025 fiscal year that are at different stages of the enforcement process. The permittees are for the California Department of Corrections Centinela Wastewater Treatment Plant, the Imperial Irrigation District El Central Generating Station, and Valley Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant. Next slide, please. Mandatory minimum penalties have performance targets established by the State Board. The performance target is to address mandatory minimum penalties violations within 18 months of identification. The summary of our performance with regard to addressing mandatory minimum penalties within 18 months is depicted in this table. Therefore, these 42 violations occurred during the 2023-2024 fiscal year. And as shown, we have addressed all 42 of 42 violations. Next slide, please. The second item in our enforcement priority list is addressing sanitary sewer overflows. Sanitary sewer overflows are untreated or partially treated sewage that spill onto an undesignated area. By undesignated area, I mean an area that was not approved by the regional board for discharges of wastewater. Sewage contains high levels of pollutant that may be harmful to human health and or the environment, therefore it requires a quick response to stop the discharge and to capture as much of the wastewater as possible before it can further contaminate the environment or harm it. These photos illustrate what a sanitary sewer overflow might look like. These photos demonstrate a spill near a channel. It shows the equipment and personnel one might see at the scene of a spill. In our region, there are currently two sanitary sewer overflow cases we are working on. Both occurred at housing communities, where the first occurred at Rio Buena Vista Homeowners Association in the city of Needles, and the second occurred at Fairway Villas Homeowners Association in the city of Blythe. Both have agreed paths forward, and we are monitoring those. Next slide, please. The third enforcement priority is addressing facilities with persistent violations, which has been an ongoing problem for on-site wastewater treatment systems. Office of Enforcement staff Wendy Wiles and David Boyers assisted this regional board by reviewing monitoring data, conducting facility inspections, and issuing enforcement actions to six facilities that have small wastewater treatment systems. As a result of this effort, four cease and desist orders were adopted by this regional board during the 2023-2024 fiscal year. Cease and desist orders establish a defined path to compliance and allows for the evaluation of the current treatment system and for any required improvements to enable the facility to comply with site-specific waste discharge requirements. For this 2024-2025 fiscal year, two additional cease and desist orders were adopted. One was adopted for Turtle Rock 29 Homeowners Association in the city of 29 Palms at the October 15, 2024 board meeting, and the second cease and desist order was adopted for Desert Knoll Housing Community, also in 29 Palms, at the April 1st, 2025 board meeting. Next slide. Of the four cease and desist orders adopted during the previous year of 2023-2024, one of those cease and desist orders has been rescinded this fiscal year due to compliance with their cease and desist order. The cease and desist order was for Desert Vista Village Homeowners Association, which was adopted August 10, 2023. They complied with their requirements and was rescinded this fiscal year at the December 10, 2024 board meeting. Next slide. Another project we are working on, and which you heard a lot about previously, is us seeking to gain additional compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. In the previous presentation, my colleague presented the necessity for the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the implementation dates, and you also heard from the High Desert Water District on the efforts that they're doing to get compliance. I will cover some of the efforts that Regional Board staff has done to gain compliance from parcel owners. Originally, there were 4,403 developed parcels that were required to stop their discharge via septic tank and had the option to connect to sewer. Many parcel owners complied, but not all. To help gain compliance from the non-compliant property owners, Regional Board staff has mailed out 770 first notices of violation between 2020 and 2022, mailed out 324 second notices of violation to property owners who had not complied with the prohibition and were issued the first notices of violation. We have made over 200 initial phone calls to property owners, which resulted in many more phone calls and follow-up emails. We also conducted site visits and issued 15 tentative cease and desist order between the months of February through April 2024, where seven of these tentative cease and desist orders were adopted by this board. From those remaining eight, two connected to sewer prior to the adoption date, one sold their property, and others required additional contact efforts or updated information. Of the seven adopted cease and desist orders, two complied, three are in the process of complying, and others were conducting further actions. Next slide, please. Of those property owners that failed to comply with adopted cease and desist order compliance due dates, the property owner may incur daily penalties of up to $5,000 a day. These penalties will be sought after through an administrative civil liability orders and will be presented to this regional board. If the orders are adopted, failure to pay administrative civil liability orders may result in liens on the property. Next slide. Thank you, and this completes our presentation.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very much. Any questions from the board members?
No? I had one for Emma. You were going over the outreach slides, and you mentioned that there was an increase in partners made, like community organizations. Can you just give me and like us an update of who those organizations are?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the main one that we have the best ties to is Alianza Coachella Valley. So IDE and the group over there, they've been really great. We've also done a little bit with, what's their name? Los Amigos de Comunidad, I think mm-hmm. it is. Yeah. So those are the two that we have the best relationship with so far, but they're, you know, we're trying to reach out a little bit more to like Comité Cívico and some of the others. But it's, you know,
yeah,
we had none a couple of years ago, so.
Yeah, that's an improvement.
Yeah.
And is the way you're trying to reach out to others just mostly via email or during, like, these community events, that, like the date fair where you happen to see them? Or just curious.
It's both. So okay. Samantha Shapiro, she is not afraid of a phone call or a cold email or anything like that. So she finds the contact information and tries reaching out in various different ways. And yeah, if we do encounter them at, you know, the Wildflower Festival or the county fair or something like that, she, you know, hands out her card or, you know, tries to get their information. Like we're really trying to, you know, make those connections because it has been really helpful to get their perspective on some of our, you know, outreach materials and you know, how we're wording things in presentations and just, you know, kind of that feedback has been really great.
All right. Well, I know, like, some of the board members have relationships with those CBOs, just the nature of our full-time job.
Yeah.
But if at any time it seems like a simple e-introduction email would support in you having that crack in the ice and talking to other organizations. I mean, at least for my part, I'm happy to support with that. Just as like an e-introduction, as an email introduction, like, because I believe like in this area, because of the distress with government, they're very receptive to being open lines of communication from initially. And if there is a person that is introduced who they already trust and have like a long-standing relationship with, they're more open to talking with like government staff. So that's just from my knowledge, what I've seen. So if that is something I can provide or support, I'm happy to do so. And then I'm looking at David here
on the
side.
That's what I did too, yeah.
If there's any conflict of interest or anything like that, you see? All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we would welcome that. That would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Awesome. That was all. I was just curious to know. Thank you.
Thank you. And I can vouch for Emma. I received a phone call regarding
Oh, good. Okay.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're trying. So, thank you.
You'd like to speak or question or?
Question.
Okay, go ahead. Just state your name again for the record.
Scott McCone, High Desert Water District Board Member. Thank you again. On the last slide, is it Perez? On the last slide, I saw civil administration orders and then property liens as a method of enforcement. So we've heard a couple of different things, that property liens are probably not a possibility. But, you know, I think this is where I get a little bit confused, is that when I read the septic prohibition order versus the water code, which I am not completely well-versed in, I've just read parts of it, and there seems to be either some conflict or maybe some inaccuracies in terminology. And so that really, when I ask some of these questions, it's based upon what I'm reading in the prohibition order. So anyway, back to the property liens, I mean, is this something that is just a closed-door item, or is there some maybes in here?
Well, a property lien is a way you collect on a debt.
Yes.
So like, what Michael skipped there is basically what you do is you get an administrative civil liability order saying you violated the cease and desist order, and then the water code allows us to take an administrative order and have that entered into Superior Court as a monetary judgment. So right. It's as though it'll be as though we sued that landowner directly, and the judgment is for those penalties. And then the lien is a way that we can have access to recover that debt. So it doesn't, it's not used to compel them to take affirmative actions. It's simply a means to say, hey, you owe the water boards this money based on your this penalties award, and the next time you sell your house, we get the first cut, or you know, whatever place we are in line. First in right, first in or I first totally in time, first in right. So totally that's understand. What he meant by the lien.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Totally. McCall, Board Member Wright was correct when she said Mission Springs did lien the properties. And what, as I recall, they formed an assessment district. Their final cost to hook up the remaining was 70 to 75 million. And they voted that if the district secured 50% in grants, would you agree to the assessment and hook up to the system? So similar to High Desert's assessment district, which all the properties were liened for a certain amount of dollars, the properties were liened. So subsequently, when they were going to be sold, they would have to pay off the lien and connect to the system. That's how that worked.
And the lien would be to use to be collecting that unpaid assessment, right?
Correct, but right. I also don't know the verbiage, since it was the final one, if they had verbiage in this, too, that they had to connect to the system. That I don't know.
Again, usually a lien is a secured interest. Gosh, you're making me, triggering me back into law school days. But
No. I'm not disputing that, yeah. David. I'm saying in addition to the property lien, sure. They may have had language that you're also going to connect to the system.
Like a real covenant.
Of course, that wouldn't just go for anybody. You'd have to go through a process to pick out the ones that probably can't even afford to hook up is probably their issue. You know, so, you know, what are you going to, you know, you can't get, you know, what out of a what. Anyway, blood out of a turnip, is that the comment? So, you know, it's a way. But talk to Mission Springs, see how they did it. I'm not sure. I think Mission Springs, you more or less used the regional board as a backup if they couldn't get the money in other ways or get the hookup in other ways, excuse me. So
not being not able to afford to hook up, that will be another matter for sure. But if I understood you, David, it's really pretty simple. Let's say that the board imposed some fines. Okay, so now you have a monetary judgment, if you will. Okay, that is what is entered against the title.
That's right.
Okay, and so some agencies that do have liens on properties.
Yes.
The properties sell, they have been known to just extinguish the lien and not collect anything at all. Or it could be we would take the regional board would say we'll take a token sum, you know, mm-hmm. for our time that we spent doing
sure.
this. So say you had $25,000 in a lien amount. Wouldn't necessarily charge them that. The idea here is just simply to get people to connect.
Yeah. Well, and even a sale of the property, like a lien is just one of the ways that you can go after to get that money. I mean, it's a big area of law because that's ultimately where these lawsuits end up, is how do you get paid, right? And so even if somebody were to sell that property, well, we could still go after them for the proceeds of that,
yes.
Of that sale or any other assets that they have. So even that would be like an enforcement discretion type of situation where if we say, all right, we'll accept 60% of that lien and call it a day versus, you know, trying to squeeze blood from a turnip.
Hey, David, realistically, though, how much does the lien have to be in dollars for the state to actually go after it? Because it's going to be expensive going after it also. And so I would think there's a minimum value that we wouldn't use your time to go after a $500 lien.
You'd be surprised. My time is not that valuable.
What's the smallest lien you've gone after?
100,000 or something like that. But, you know, liens that aren't for that much also, you know, are not necessarily easier or harder to collect. It's really not that hard to get, once you have an administrative civil liability order. I've done it in Sacramento County Superior Court, and I'm going to eventually have to do it in Riverside and San Bernardino counties as well. You just file a petition. It took me a little time personally to like figure out the first time I was doing it, because I didn't really have any models to go off of. But now that I do, I could, you know, it doesn't take that much time and effort.
So does the state have a department? Because I know in the past there were entities up here that were penalized, you know, for thousands of dollars for noncompliance. But then this regional board doesn't get involved in any of the collections or anything. So that's, they said it's turned over to someone else.
It could. Actually, you know, there is, it's a little bit of a patchwork when it comes to enforcement of judgments. Because, you know, to some extent, it is my responsibility as the board's attorney to do what is necessary to make sure that the sum that is owed to us, the penalties, is secured with as many, you know, by as many assets as we can. We don't always take an active role in that enforcement. And one of the things that you can do is you can force a sheriff's sale of a property in order to satisfy that debt. Now, we can actually retain the Attorney General to help with that as well, especially when it comes to, you know, compelling the sale of a property to satisfy that judgment. But usually what we do is we have that judgment lien. The lien lasts for 10 years, and we're getting better about renewing those judgments, but it's kind of a more passive role in terms of how we handle that. So, yeah. But the Office of Enforcement does, from time to time, get involved as well.
The state has nothing to do with the liens that Mission Springs has. Mission Springs puts the lien on, and then we hire a company, they hired a company, that that watches out to make sure, I think every year you've got there's a certain amount of time so the lien doesn't fall off.
Yeah.
And so they have this company that does that for them. Mm-hmm. And, but the state didn't really have to be involved at all.
No, that's because in that situation, it is a private debt between the Mission Springs Water District and the individual property owner or the title holder.
Actually, it's a groundwater protection measure. It's not a debt. I mean, and we've got to have a little common sense here when we're protecting the groundwater.
Yeah.
I mean, what they've already done is protecting the groundwater. They have 158 left that are scattered all over, right? Is that what you're saying in this report? And to me, the groundwater protection is more important than $5,000 that the state could get from them, you know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, on one hand, from a policy standpoint, it is important that, you know, when we issue an order because somebody has disregarded their responsibilities or disregarded an order that we've issued, it is absolutely in our interest to remind people that there are very real monetary consequences that come from that. You know, and we actually do mean what we say. We're not just doing this for the press release. But there are, you know, a lot of things that weigh into those sensitive decisions in terms of how we prioritize our limited time. I'm not always privy to those, being usually on the advisory team. So that is something the Office of Enforcement can oftentimes attest to a little bit more. But the idea of the lien in our case is really about making sure that people actually are compelled to pay the fines that we levy.
And to hook up eventually.
Yeah, and it kind of works back from a policy standpoint. If people know that there are real financial, that it doesn't pay to ignore what we say, then that compel that once okay. People see there are real consequences, then you can kind of see how there might be an incentive to comply.
Right, and that's usually where it boils down to, people who just can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think maybe, when you think about this, a little bit less about collecting money.
Mm-hmm.
The lien is simply there that, okay, at some point this could be enforced. But what we would rather see happen is that, let's say the property sells, you want to get clear title, get that lien extinguished,
that's right.
Simply hook up to the sewer. It could cost $2,500, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. We don't know about the Joshua tree, so I'm not even going to put that in there, but it seems like the contractors were $2,000 and $5,000 just for a simple hookup. And again, you go back to, let's say there's a $25,000 lien. Give it, and maybe take a, like I said, a token amount for the trouble to place the lien, $1,000. Property owner gets to clear title, they're hooked up to the sewer, and a problem. So it's not about trying to grab 25 grand or whatever the monetary amount. It's just there. One clear title, that's it. So what I'm hearing, I mean, like I say, I've heard that this can't be done, but now I saw on a slide, if there is a monetary judgment, then that's how you go about getting a lien. You don't just slap a lien on a property with no,
lien is a secured interest.
Okay. Well, then that
right to be paid.
I mean, that sounds like kind of the solution to me is. And here's the thing: it might take 10 years for somebody to sell the house, but so what? It will eventually get there without a lot of pain and angst for the property owner. We would rather have them hook up because this is not meant to be a punishment.
I mean, in that case, you know, the reason why they get that lien and the reason why they have that administrative civil liability order is because we actually, first we had the cease and desist order, and then they violate the cease and desist order, and then we have another trial, a hearing, and then we say, you had notice and opportunity to contest the cease and desist order. There's the evidence that you're continuing to disregard it, and you know, here's the consequence of disregarding that.
Not me to, I think that's for the board, the president to recognize you, not me.
Yeah, I'm just saying,
you know, I'm Cassandra Owens, and I'm just kind of wanting to chime in because what I'm hearing is a hybrid. What you want the lien to do is different than what the lien that we would go after the parcel owner for, because once they do not comply with our order, which has the ability to fine them, I believe it's $5,000 a day, then each day that they don't comply, they're accruing that amount. So any lien that we put against that property at that point would have that amount associated with it. But what you really want is what, that's what I'm hearing, is a lien that would compel them to hook up.
Well, actually, not exactly. It would simply be, it's a means that they cannot get clear title, which, by the way, if you do sue a property owner, and that property is associated, I think that
you can file a Liz pendants.
Absolutely.
But if the thing about, if we had already issued you an administrative civil liability order, there is no pending proceeding. There's just a judgment, mm-hmm. And so that's why I was kind of quick to, because I knew exactly where Member Music was going earlier. Was that the idea? Because I used to have to deal with Liz pendants from time to time while working at the court. You know, these are, you need to have a pending proceeding that relates to that property.
Cassandra, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You know, I think one thing we have to realize, though, too, is materiality. Mm-hmm. I doubt if we could find a single-family home, since over 99% have hooked up, that we could really fine them $1,000 a day for using their septic tank. I think it's unrealistic.
You're not going to make them take out their septic tank.
No. I mean, I think it is... We do not have a pending proceeding. Before we talk about like what our, go too far in depth about what kind of penalties we would assess,
right,
a hypothetical situation, I think that I would just encourage us to like wait for an actual proceeding if one were to be brought towards us. There have been no complaints as far as I know, and then there would be an analysis as part of that in terms of applying the enforcement policy to.
And that's why I encourage the water district to look to see if there's any vehicle they can do before providing this free infrastructure to ensure that everyone's going to hook up.
And we have met with staff from the district to talk about options, but those are confidential discussions.
Right.
So we have been talking. Well,
I think
our esteemed attorney David has a vehicle that he could make that happen.
I think the process that I think the other district is taking, there is no cease and desist order to begin with. Okay, so you don't start that process. The district just put the lien on the property. If, you know, and the state comes back and say, well, here's how they're complying. The property is complying, will be hooked up eventually, as long as the septic tank is in good shape. Okay, if it's overflowing or anything like that, different scenario. And that's, I think, how they did it. The state was not involved at all, just the water district, because there was no cease and desist order.
Perhaps maybe you could connect with the other water districts, see what their process is. And
one of our colleagues, Jennifer, was here. I think she put that in her notes.
Awesome.
Right.
Thank you.
So again, yeah, I just want to reiterate that this, I think, should be less about just Yankee Clear Title. Putting the sewer, connecting the sewer, that seems like the least painful.
Yes.
Well, you know, Scott, and you know, it's phase one, when we had single family homes sell, they could have extended the assessment, but all of a sudden we'd receive a check, they paid it off. They saw a lien, and the lender or whomever paid everything off. So we would get people paying off their assessment years in advance because they never inquired on how to transfer to the subsequent purchaser, and they were assumable per our SRF loan.
I think that I have read somewhere that when there's an order of fact, that there is a state agency that will help us get the funds. Anything like that? I've read that somewhere.
I have not. I'm not familiar with that agency personally.
We might have a few. I mean, I know I'm looking out to the future, but there might be a few that say we just flat out can't afford. Other maybe. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Turning to item 10, the board will now hear a report from Executive Officer Michael Placentia. Michael.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, Vice Chair Gonzalez, members of the board and members of the public. I'm Michael Placencia, Executive Officer. I have a few updates. First, you just heard an information item that provided a summary of the past fiscal year's performance from our staff. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the groups for pulling together and working diligently these last few weeks of the year and closed out multiple items that we were able to include as completed in the final report. There was very effective cooperation within and between the units and programs to finish the year strong. During the month of May, staff from the Land Disposal Unit coordinated preparation of monitoring equipment and materials and conducted the sampling of the New River. The associated staff were Julia Mestas, Bradley Bowers, and Andrea Varela. Also in May, Regional Water Board staff attended the Binational Technical Committee in Mexicali, with attending agencies representing both sides of the California-Mexico border to discuss current and future infrastructure projects and programs that are related to improving water quality in the New River. On May 22nd, the State Water Board held a workshop in the Salton Sea Management Program. As you heard about earlier, our Water Quality Standards Unit Chief Emma McCorkle sat on the panel at the workshop and addressed water quality monitoring at the Salton Sea. And later that month, she coordinated sampling at the Species Conservation Habitat East Sedimentation Pond. I know this answers a question that came up during a previous board meeting. The data derived from these sampling efforts will be used to inform planning projects, such as the beneficial use designation of the species conservation habitats. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
No, I don't have a question, but I have some things here. Okay, Michael, on your monthly, I guess bi-monthly or whatever it is, report that you give us on what's going on, updates on what's going on. You had asked us, you know, if we had anything we wanted to bring out in Yuki, and I think at one point in time, the field work notices that we saw on the screen here, that would be nice to share that with the board. I don't think I've ever seen one in person. I don't know how many you guys have, but that was, I think, one of the things that I had asked for a while back, that maybe that's where you got some of that from, because that was what you wanted us to see and what you wanted us to ask you to help us with. Well, I think those work notices would be a good idea for the board to read those and see what those are. The outreach ones, you know, when they outreach to the public.
Sure. I can work with site cleanup to compile those and share them through the same briefing.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think do they go out in emails or something? Is that how those things go out?
They're mailed out. And posted.
We could just be emailed them. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I can add them to your email briefing if you'd like.
Okay. Another thing is, years ago, we had a bi-national technical committee meeting in our district. They actually all came to Palm Desert at the time. It was really kind of an interesting, we could do it closer to the border if we ever decided to do it, but I think it might be something we might throw out there, because we, years ago, I mean, it is bi-national. You know, we could host one of those meetings, possibly. Just throwing it out there, and maybe even a New River Improvement Tour eventually, or something like that. I mean, they give us tours on there, what's on going on in Mexico. You know, we give us them tours about what we're doing and what we had to do because of the fact that the New River, you know, raw sewage over into our side, and this is now what we had to do to help this community. Maybe something like that. Think about it. Just throwing it out there. And also, I wanted to make sure that staff will follow up on the Imperial Valley Community College, maybe grants or low interest or whatever what Laurel had mentioned.
Thank you, Member Wright. I do believe we did have some attendees from our counterparts in Mexico attend the tour at the New River Improvement Project.
Ribbon cutting?
Not the ribbon cutting. In addition to the ribbon cutting, but the full tour that we were party to. I want to say.
Oh, you know, there was some.
There. Yeah, I forget the month. Maybe March.
But not the whole technical committee. Bi-national technical committee on the Mexico side.
I could certainly open up, explore an invitation for them, absolutely.
Well, even if it was, I don't know if it's feasible, you know, it was just something I thought, we know years ago they came to Palm Desert, all of them, so, and we had a meeting in Palm Desert. They loved it because they got to come and be in Palm Desert.
I can extend an invitation and explore that option.
That's fine. Just throw it out there. Like I said, don't even know if it's feasible.
Considering the current climate right now, I know the ICE is very active and taking people, so I'm not sure if it's the best thing right now, to be honest with you. But an invitation at the risk.
I'm certainly happy to, Chair Perez, I'm certainly happy to explore an invitation and see what other ways we might be able to include them, increasingly include them.
Yeah, right, and no hurry, you know, no hurry. I just left that. See what else was there.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we move to item 11, board members' comments and suggestions for future agenda items. Do any board members have anything to discuss?
You know, I would like to thank the staff for their year-end performance update. And I was wondering, since we have such limited interaction with the staff, that next time maybe each department head and their staff could be there. And maybe we just have one item on the agenda, and it's the performance update, and we have it as a workshop. And that way we get to see all the staff and what various departments they're working at, since it only happens once a year.
I'm sorry, can you restate that, Member Music?
I'll talk to you about it all.
Okay.
My chair is squelching my talking.
Anyone else?
No, sorry, I already did my comments on the question and the questions of his report.
Great, wonderful.
So
okay,
I jumped the gun there.
Next item is the chair's report, and I have nothing to report at this time. And do we have anything for closed session for item 13?
Actually, yes. Pursuant to Government Code 11126, Subdivision A, the board will now adjourn to closed session, which is item 13 on the agenda, to discuss the evaluation of the performance of the executive officer. The board has no more open session items on the agenda, so this meeting will be adjourned at the conclusion of that closed session.
David, since we didn't make provisions for a closed session, I would suggest we defer to the next meeting.
Well, actually, we did. We always do announce this.
I mean, a physical location here.
It can be done in here. If you would rather defer this,
let's defer to the next meeting at our own home. Yes.
Yeah, so we can prepare. I wasn't prepared for that.
Meeting adjourned.
Okay. No closed session.
And next meeting is September 2nd at the Palm Desert Region 7 boardroom.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you.